This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
And now, America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day for Republicans to look ahead and to get some perspective by looking back at a 100-year war for control of the conservative movement. There is a new book, a fascinating subject, a wonderful writer behind that book. The book is called The Right, The 100-Year War for American Conservatism. For people who believe that conservatives have never been more divided than they are right now, divided over the candidacy of Donald Trump to return to the presidency, divided over a series of bitter, bitter primaries that are being fought at the congressional district level, Senate level, gubernatorial level, all across the country in this election coming up, between people who you might call populists and other people who you might call mainstream Republicans. The language doesn't matter because this goes back very far in the history of the Republican Party. The whole idea of Matthew Continetti's book is that we can try to understand the current conservative crack-up by looking at the last conservative crack-ups and what happened there. Matthew Continetti is a senior fellow at American Enterprise Institute, where his work is focused on American political thought and history, with particular emphasis on the development of the Republican Party and the American conservative movement. Matthew, congratulations on your book.
Thank you, Michael. It's great to be with you.
It's a real pleasure. First off, has your book been condemned yet by either side of the sort of ongoing struggle for the, people would say, the soul of the Republican Party?
Well, I think there are a few critics of the book, but the truth is, in this book, Michael, I try to be as fair as I could be, and I try to present all of the sides in terms that they present themselves. And so actually, to tell you the truth, I've been heartened that most of the figures I discuss in my book on the intellectual right today, which, as you said, is very divided, they say that they appreciate my treatment of them. So no one's calling for burning me at the stake quite yet.
Not yet, but given how ferocious the conflicts seem today, for instance, one of the things that seems to be uniting the country right now is the response to the war in Ukraine. There are very, very few people in the country who could be said to be Putinistas, who are on Putin's side, who believe some of the propaganda coming out from the Kremlin. But does it surprise you a little bit, looking at the history of the conservative movement, that even a movement like this, which has its own stream of isolationism, which was very powerful, and you write about that in your book, and focusing on Senator Robert Taft, for instance, who was a very much beloved and admired Republican leader in the 1940s and 50s. If you look at an issue like Ukraine, doesn't it surprise you that the most outspoken, colorful, extreme critics of American support for Ukraine are Republicans, not Democrats?
Well, I have to say, researching the right and writing it, I made me somewhat less surprised at the attitudes and opinions of some of the figures on the non-interventionist side of the foreign policy debate, the figures who are critical of NATO, who don't want us to become more involved with the war in Ukraine, and prior to the invasion were even Putin-friendly, viewing him as the leader of the nationalist revival across the world. I look at my book, I begin it in the 1920s, and I examine the right in the 1920s. And when I looked at the American right in the 1920s, I saw a right and the Republican Party that was very much similar to today's Republican Party in some of its policy positions, whether that was opposition to immigration, whether that was belief in a certain insulation of the American economy from global competition, especially today vis-a-vis China, or whether it was a reluctance to become involved overseas. You see these parallels. And so with some of the more outspoken figures who are warning against American involvement in Ukraine coming from the right, not that surprising to me. I think we forget just how controversial American intervention has been on the right really since the end of the Cold War 30-some years ago, and even beginning with the first Gulf War. In 1991, as I discuss in my book, The Right, there were prominent opponents of that intervention on the right, such as Pat Buchanan. And when you look at the American right today, if anything, I believe the influence of Buchanan and his ideas have grown. So the debate is ongoing. I think most Americans and indeed most Republicans and conservatives are sympathetic toward the Ukrainians. They want the United States to help the Ukrainians. But they still remain leery of becoming involved or intervening on our own.
What's interesting about it is you mentioned Pat Buchanan. Pat Buchanan is a historian in his own right and has written some fine books about various themes in American history. And he did a book called A Republic, Not an Empire, where he was widely criticized for his sympathy for the America First Committee and for some of the more extreme manifestations of isolationism in the past, who thought that it was wrong to see that we had a stake in the fight between Churchill and Hitler. And wouldn't you have thought that today history would have settled that issue, even for people on the right?
I would have hoped, and I would have hoped that the experiences of 9/11 and the threat of international terrorism, and also the rising threat of communist China and its ambitions for dominance in the Pacific, would make Americans on the right and the left more aware that there's no ignoring the outside world, especially in today's age of technology and communications and transport. And America has to be involved. But there has always been this tendency on the American right to want to focus inward, to have the view for many years that involvement overseas would corrupt America. You mentioned Robert Taft, the senator who is a character in my book, The Right. That was his view. He didn't want America to become involved in Europe because when he looked at Europe, he saw the wreckage of World War I, the collapse of European civilization. He didn't want that to come to the United States. Then there's another group, though, which is actually more like the left in its attitudes, which is it thinks America is corrupt. And America shouldn't go overseas because our intentions aren't good. I've been surprised by that. I've been surprised by the growth of that idea, Michael, on the American right. And you do see places now on the American right that are becoming almost impossible to distinguish from the anti-war, neo-isolationist left that we had after America's involvement in Vietnam so many years ago.
Yeah, isn't it amazing? Marjorie Taylor Greene and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez coming together to oppose America's involvement in defense of the ideals of liberty. The new book is called The Right, The 100-Year War for American Conservatism. When we come back, I want to speak to what we can learn from the past about the current debates in the Republican Party. And the bitter primary fights in which Republicans are likely to be involved in the next couple of weeks. We're not even looking ahead to 2024. Speaking to Matthew Continetti of American Enterprise Institute, published in the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Atlantic, all over. A new book, The Right. We'll be right back. Washington Policy Center, WPC, is Washington State's champion for free market reforms and is nationally renowned for its effectiveness in an ideologically hostile state. It's led the effort against state and local income taxes. Its research and policy analysis are relied on by lawmakers, media, and citizen activists for accuracy, fresh perspective, and to expose the political manipulation of data. Our state needs WPC more than ever, and we need you to be part of it. Become a member today at WashingtonPolicy.org. Is our country's distinctive power and prosperity the product of some happy accidents or criminal activity, or is it God's hand on America? That's the title, actually, of my most recent book. You can get a hardcover copy, personally signed by me, together with a full audiobook, and it comes to you together with an MP3 player so you can hear it anytime you want. It's all at a reduced price while supplies last. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner for God's Hand on America, look for that audiobook and hardcover book bundle.
Introducing the all-new My Slippers from MyPillow. 2 years in development. Designed to wear indoor, outdoor, all day long. Made with MyPillow foam and impact gel to help prevent fatigue. And made with quality leather suede. For a limited time, you can get 50% off the new My Slippers. They're super comfortable, and you'll like them so much you'll want to get pairs of them for the entire family. Go to MyPillow.com and click on the radio listener square and use promo code MEDVED. That's promo code MEDVED, M-E-D-V-E-D. You'll also get deep discounts on all MyPillow products, like the Giza Dream bed sheets, the mattress topper, and towel sets. Call right now 1-800-320-6280. That's 1-800-320-6280 and use promo code MEDVED. Or go to the web at MyPillow.com. The all-new My Slippers from MyPillow.
GCN's policy is open forum, avoiding censorship. Defense costs for words spoken outside of our control supersede the ability to deliver voices to this important talk platform. The First Amendment is the foundation of our core values. Cancel culture is silencing voices regardless of perspective. Freedom to speak is in the balance. Support the legitimacy of speech itself. Consider donating to SaveGCN.com. That's SaveGCN.com.
If you're like most Americans, you're pretty much in disbelief with what's going on in the world. As we all know, global problems are having local consequences. Too many of them. And if the peanut butter really hits the fan, are you ready? Grocery store supply chains are only as strong as their weakest link. Don't wait for them to break. Now's the time to secure emergency food for everyone in your family. My Patriot Supply is America's largest preparedness company. Our specially packaged and delicious food stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. It'll be there when you need it. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and pick up several emergency food kits. There are a dozen different sizes that average over 2,000 calories per day. Our food kits will ship quickly and discreetly to your door. Having food storage in your home beats government food lines hands down. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com today and prepare for what's coming. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
Matthew Continetti is my guest. He is one of the most perceptive and persuasive commentators out there when it comes to issues regarding the future of the Republican Party. And I wanted to speak about that in the relation of your new book, which is extraordinarily relevant for anybody who cares about the future of the Republican Party. You have to know something about the past of this party, which has been, and really nothing else close. The Republicans, since the party was created and they ran the first time for president in 1856, no other political organization ever, not any incarnation of the Democrats, has been so consistently powerful, successful, and appealing to a broad variety of Americans. Right now, I think that there are people on all sides of debates who are worried about the future of the Republican Party. Given the state of divisions right now and the kind of primary battles that, for instance, are shaping up in Missouri or Ohio or Pennsylvania, across the country, given the divisions in the party, what can we learn from the past about repairing those divisions and engaging in a united front to win control of the House of Representatives and then the Senate?
For sure. Well, I think one lesson, Michael, of my book is that conservatives tend to be united against things, but tend to be divided over what they're for. And so right now, the Republican Party and conservative movement are in a way benefiting from being on the outside because they are united in opposition to the Democrats who are in control of all the levers of power and who are doing their best to screw things up in the country and in the world. The other thing I would say is that leadership is very important. It matters a lot who the party decides to put forward to represent it. And in my book, I go into detail about times when certain elements in the party have put forth candidates who just repel mainstream American voters, men and women who don't care all that much about politics or ideology, but still vote, still care about their country. If these types of voters look at the nominees of a Republican Party and find someone who is out of the mainstream or kind of kooky or just kind of mean, they're not going to vote for them. They're not going to support them. So leadership matters. And
what would be an example of that kind of nominee that you think put people off because of his personal characteristics?
Sure. Well, I quite like him. It's kind of an unusual example, but one reason why Barry Goldwater was not so successful in 1964 was his personality, which kind of has this irascible charm when you study him, did not translate easily to the American public. And he was also the victim of just an incredible amount of media bias as well. But when, you know, he delivered that speech at the Republican convention in 1964, and he said to the national audience, "Let me remind you that extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice." I have a story in the book where one reporter turned to another in earshot of a friend of mine, and the reporter said to the other reporter, "Dear God, he's going to run as Barry Goldwater," knowing that just wouldn't take. And then you contrast that, the Goldwater kind of irascible, prickly personality, with Reagan, who makes his debut in a televised speech for Goldwater just 1 week before the 1964 election, and you have the complete opposite. You have a candidate who is energetic, future-oriented, dynamic, willing to talk to anyone, always has a funny anecdote or a quip at the ready, and it just attracts more than it repels. So there are a host of different Republicans that you could point to saying that they were just too much. The personality just did not jibe with the electorate. Even more recent, we can look at the examples from the Senate races in 2010 and in 2012, where Republicans lost winnable seats because of the candidates that won.
I am not a witch.
Yes. Yeah, Christine O'Donnell in Delaware, Sharon Angle in Nevada.
Todd Aiken in Missouri.
Indiana. Yeah, I mean.
May he rest in peace.
So yeah. There are a lot of these candidates, and the question, that's one lesson I draw, is who you put forward. The difference between a I'm not a witch and, say, a Glenn Youngkin is huge. It's huge. And it matters. It matters a lot.
Do you think that Glenn Youngkin, by the way, is a presidential possibility in 24?
I don't know in 24. I think a few things would have to happen for that. I will say this. You know, I mentioned Reagan. He wins election as governor of California in 66. And he kind of puts his hat in the ring in 68 as kind of a favored son candidate. And there was some worry in the Nixon camp, actually, in the 1968 Republican primary that Reagan would get in. So it's not out of question for someone to just jump in after winning office. But I think a few things would have to happen for Youngkin to do that this time around.
Okay. This time around, what do you believe are the main issues dividing Republicans, and how can we avoid party crack-ups? I mean, the most famous party crack-up, which I think is before your book begins, is President Taft versus President Theodore Roosevelt,
right,
where basically a very winnable election got blown because of Republican divisions. What are the issues that are most threatening and that need to be dealt with for the campaigns of 2022 and of 2024?
Well, Michael, the funny thing when I look at the Republican Party today is I find actually quite a bit of agreement on policy, but a large disagreement over personality and attitude. And so when you look at, say, the immigration issue, right now, there are very few candidates out there making a case for an amnesty of illegal immigrants. There are very few candidates talking about the GOP autopsy of 2013. And if you look at, say, tax cuts, right? Judges, even the general support for the war and for aiding the Ukrainians. I think there's a lot of agreement. The sense that we're in a culture war. Look at parental involvement in education, for example. A huge consensus, I think. But what the disagreement seems to me is what the personality of the movement is going to be. Is it going to be abrasive? Is it going to be take no prisoners? Is it going to be constant combat? Or is it going to present a friendlier face to those independents and suburban voters that make all the difference? I think that argument over personality and attitude is really going to weigh heavily in 22 and 24. And I think there are...
Matt Continetti, can you hang with us for a little bit more? Because I think this absolutely needs a follow-up. And I think we may have some areas where we differ. I'll be right back with you in a moment.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg. Ukrainian President Zelensky thinks the world should be prepared for the possibility that Russian President Putin could order a tactical nuclear strike against Ukraine. This as CIA Director William Burns was addressing a crowd at Georgia Tech on Thursday. Burns talking about Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and he calls out China's silence on the invasion.
A silent partner in Putin's aggression, Xi Jinping's China is our greatest challenge. In many ways, the most profound test that CIA has ever faced.
Confrontations between Israeli police and Palestinians have resulted in 6 deaths this week in the West Bank. The Israeli army saying it will deploy more forces to the West Bank to step up against suspected terrorists. Israel saying they plan to bar Palestinians from entering the area this weekend. USA Radio News.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only 2 documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. It's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.
I'm very eager to read the new book, The Right, The 100-Year War for American Conservatism. No, I haven't read it yet. I've read excerpts of the book. I just wasn't sent the book, but anything by Matthew Continetti is going to be worth reading. And this one very much and obviously would be. We were just talking about one of the aspects of Republican life that I think you're spot on about. I think you're completely correct that most of the very angry debates that we have right now have to do with one individual, and it's the former president, Donald Trump. And a lot of the objections have to do with not basic principles or core ideas or even legislative programs. They have to do with and you use the term personality. I wouldn't. I would use one of the terms, and I think this is at the core of a lot of debates Republicans have, is what's the nature of our political combat, of our political goals? Are we working against a party? Are we working against another movement? Are we working against other Americans who are evil and are setting out to destroy our country? Or are we working against people who just happen to be wrong, because they disagree with us about policy? And I can't tell you how many listener responses and other communications I've received saying, oh, you don't get the Democrats, you don't get that they're actually trying to bring this country down because they hate this country, etc. And First of all, I don't believe that's true. Secondly, I happen to believe that that is an entirely wrong political approach. And don't you think that there is a sort of an air to apocalypticism of this is the end of the world if we don't win this election, if we don't win this particular fight, if we don't win this particular Supreme Court decision, it's the end of America? And that kind of doomsday preaching goes against the native optimism of the Republican Party that goes all the way back to Lincoln.
I agree with you completely, Michael. I think you can see it in the changes in some of the slogans at the Trump rallies. In 2016, it was Make America Great Again. After the election of 2020, you see more and more of the slogan Save America. That is, America is on the precipice, and if Trump is not restored, the country will end. And I, like you, reject that idea. And I think it also will turn off a lot of people who, just live their daily lives. They wake up, they go to work, they got their kids in school. They are worried about inflation. They are worried about crime. They are worried about what's going on at the border. They are worried about Putin. But if they somehow see the Republican Party going in a apocalyptic direction, I think that they're going to be repelled, and it won't work to the conservative movement's advantage nor to the Republican Party's advantage.
Okay, when we come back to Reagan, and you inevitably do, I'd like to go back a little bit further to Dwight Eisenhower, because if you look at his political success and his standing now, he is acknowledged by everyone as a near great president or a great president. Eisenhower was a Republican leader with comparable popularity to Reagan. How did these two do it and manage to bring their party together so effectively and so dramatically?
Well, Eisenhower, of course, was a national hero and had, in some ways, standing beyond the Republican Party. Even the Democrats were interested in having him run as their nominee. He settled on the Republican Party, and I think he represented a small-C Midwestern conservatism. But his stature and his kind of presence as the protector, the grandfather of the United States in some ways, really carried through into his influence over the party as a whole. I will say, though, that he was fighting with Joe McCarthy subtly. He tasked Nixon to go after Joe McCarthy. And also many of the early conservative movement were critical of Eisenhower, because in their view, Eisenhower retained Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal, which they rejected, and also was carrying on the policy of containment of communism, where the early conservatives like William F. Buckley Jr. at the National Review wanted to roll back communism. But I think what Eisenhower and Reagan shared was a confidence in themselves, a sense that they had already brought to politics a great deal of accomplishment, and a surety of belief that then was translated into their party and then into their program as well.
Okay, so I'm not asking you to make an endorsement for 2024 or anything of the kind. I wouldn't dare to put you in that position. Matthew Continetti is the author of the new book, The Right, The 100-Year War for American Conservatism. To win that war and to win elections, to elect a Republican president and a Republican House and a Republican Senate, name three or four figures out there who you think should be looked at rather than as an alternative to a rerun of the Trump versus Biden grumpy old men duel.
Well, I think of some senators. I think of Senator Tim Scott, who is extremely popular in the party.
Absolutely.
He has a sense of optimism. He has amazing communication skills. I look at another promising senator, Tom Cotton from Arkansas, different profile than Scott, a little bit harder edged, a little bit more cerebral, but with a great political instinct, and I think a interest in uniting the populists with the more traditional Reaganite elements in the party. And then I look at some of these governors. Some of them are leaving politics, like Larry Hogan and like Charlie Baker, but also someone like Glenn Youngkin in Virginia, in charge, you know, an executive, but also presenting a more optimistic side, still recognizing the populist discontent and the problems with progressivism, especially in our schools, and the necessity to deal with that, but doing it in such a way that brings in people from the suburbs rather than repelling them. That's I think, the model that needs to be followed while still holding true to the political institutions set up by the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. To me, that is the essence of American conservatism. It is a fidelity to the principles of the Declaration and to the institutions of the Constitution and our political system, which secures individual liberty.
Two very quick questions. Do you think that Governor DeSantis would run even if he had to run against Trump? Yes or no? And does Governor DeSantis, who's attracted so much attention, have a unifying potential for the Republican Party?
I think DeSantis will run regardless of Trump's decision. And I think DeSantis has shown great promise and is on his way to reelection. And then I think needs to begin a pivot to making sure that he doesn't he's able to attract national audiences, not just the Florida conservatives, which are many and which will probably get him reelected.
That's Matthew Consonetti. His new book, a fascinating subject and great insights in The Right, The 100-Year War for American Conservatism. It's going to be formally published on April 19th. We'll post some of his recent commentary pieces and Wall Street Journal reference for a piece that he just published. One of the key issues, parental control in schools, that's become an explosive issue in San Diego. We'll get to that coming up on the MedVet Show.
Was very bad, and since I've taken Relief Factor, I've been able to walk normally again, and I was having a hard time walking, and the pain was very bad, and since I've taken Relief Factor, I've been able to walk normally again, and the pain has gone away. I really am walking pain-free, so I just want to recommend this to anyone who has severe pain or any type of pain. It is really a miracle product.
Try Relief Factor. It has worked wonderfully for literally hundreds of thousands and certainly for me. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner for Relief Factor, and order your own quick start. Nothing to lose but your pain. The whole world to gain. MichaelMedved.com. Click on the banner for Relief Factor or call 833-654-PAIN. Relief Factor. Don't you get tired of commercials screaming at you to buy gold right now with inflated promises on future values? In an unregulated industry, you need honest, real experts to give you solid advice to protect your wealth and give you top picks, too, on the best coins and bullion based on real-time data and historical trends. For example, as environmental policy becomes a hot topic, one precious metal that's been significantly undervalued for years is potentially set to surge. Nick Rovich, owner of Amfed Coin and Bullion, has long recommended this precious metal. Up to 600,000 ounces of this rare metal will be needed by 2030 to produce green hydrogen. Nick is doubling down on this pick, and you should, too. Call Nick to find out more. Now, I've been friends with Nick for several years, and he's my go-to guy when it comes to coins and bullion. I trust him. You can, too. Call Nick at 800-221-7694, AmericanFederal.com. 800-221-7694, AmericanFederal.com.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau de Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com, or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.
Americans have the most colorful language in the world. And that vibrant language is our basis for thinking in big ways, new ways, efficient ways, and better ways. Americans have freedom of speech. The pairing of our colorful language and freedom of speech has made us the people and the nation that we are today. Imagine what it would be like not having the freedom to speak our minds, communicate our thoughts and ideas, and hear those from others. Americans have a passion for and yearn for the truth. There are those who want to destroy our freedom and right to hear the truth. The truth is under attack. GCN is under attack. I'm asking our fellow broadcasters and you to rise up and help us defend our right to free speech. Would you like to join us? Please consider visiting SaveGCN.com. Please help us bring you the truth 24 hours per day. I'm Vincent Finelli.
Medved Show, we were just talking with Matthew Continetti about big issues that work for Republicans. I do believe that parental involvement and control of basic school decisions is one of those issues. And there's right now been a, it's actually the largest by enrollment high school in the San Diego School District, Patrick Henry High School, where a principal made a unilateral decision to cancel all the advanced placement and honors classes because they were discriminatory. At least that was the claim of some activists. We will get to that issue a little bit later on the Michael Medved Show, speaking to one of the prominent Republican leaders in California who's running for statewide office, Lanhee Chen. First, today there was a great deal of attention to some unrest, as people would describe it. It's actually a minor riot. It is not, repeat, it is not a new breakout of the Intifada. It is not a new war. It's not a new disaster. There were battles during Friday prayers, and it was basically to give you some perspective on the way that this can be, I think, fairly reported. UPI, United Press International, which was there on the ground, writes that more than 150 Palestinian worshippers and a few Israeli police officers were injured during a six-hour clash today at the Temple Mount compound of the Old City of Jerusalem, a site that's often a scene of religious-inspired violence. Okay, I don't believe that this violence is religiously inspired on either side. The authorities said dozens of Palestinians carrying flags of Hamas and the Palestinian Authority made their way toward the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Right, they're just worshippers. They're carrying flags of a known certified terrorist organization, Hamas. They made their way toward the Al-Aqsa Mosque in the Temple Mount area, and with rocks and other items, began attacking Israeli security forces. By the way, they also attacked Jewish worshippers who were gathered because of the day before Passover at the Western Wall right below this compound and started throwing rocks down at them, and they had to be stopped because otherwise people who were in a nonviolent way engaged in Jewish worship are attacked at their site. This is the way that the news was covered by CNN and gives you a sense of what's going on. Listen.
Tensions had already been high. Nerves were on edge, not least because today is a unique day where Ramadan, Good Friday, and Passover all overlap. What you can see behind me at the entrance to the Old City is crowds of people trying to enter, including tourists who are kind of caught up in all of this. Israeli security forces seem to be limiting the people who can go in. We did hear that earlier they were already limiting the people who could enter the Al-Aqsa compound, which is within these gates. They were limiting them to only people over the age of 50 or women of any ages, trying to limit young men out of the compound. What we know is around 5 a.m. we were actually in the Old City, and we started hearing the booms and the firecrackers of clashes. And according to the Israeli police, they say that they were responding to violent rioters, they say, throwing rocks and launching fireworks. They responded with stun grenades and rubber bullets, according to the Palestinian Red Crescent. At least 100 people now, this is the most recent numbers we have been injured as a result of those clashes. The Israeli police say 3 of their officers have been injured.
Okay, the idea that this is a religious clash, there was zero violence, zero, from any Jewish civilians. And the reason that they were limiting the people who could go into Al-Aqsa, and that had been negotiated before with the Waqf, they increased the number of people who would go up there to 60,000. And they do not allow young men to go up there in that crowd scene because there are literally thousands of mosques in Israel and different places. But this particular mosque has always been used as a place where young men come up there and they begin throwing rocks, which they are pre-stored because you can't just pick up a rock on the ground there, but these big rocks, some of the biggest boulders, can cause significant damage. This is the way the New York Times headlines read. Israeli police clashed with Palestinian stone throwers for hours. Israelis and Palestinians offer conflicting accounts on what touched off the confrontations. After the fighting dies down, midday prayers pass in relative calm. That's the important part that they're not covering on TV, of course. Israel arrests more than 400 Palestinians in Jerusalem in unrest. Clashes pose another challenge to Israel's already fragile government. That's a coalition government that includes members from an Islamist party who are Muslim Arabs in the cabinet. More audio from CNN.
The situation is incredibly serious right now, also because we are seeing some social media videos of Israeli forces within the actual mosque itself. That is seen as very provocative to Muslims. And there is a concern that this could spark an even wider conflict, because keep in mind it was a year ago, right around this time, right around Ramadan, when tensions and clashes in Jerusalem, including at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, helped spark off that 11-day war between Hamas and militants in Gaza and Israel. Now, tensions had already been rising in Israel and across the West Bank as the Israeli military stepped up their operations and raids in the West Bank in response to a series of terror attacks in Israel that killed 14 people in less than 3 weeks. So tensions were already high, but then the tensions at Al-Aqsa are only bringing things even higher. The question will be, will the militant group Hamas in Gaza respond, and how?
Okay, the fact is Hamas, that militant group, how militant are they? Some of these terrorist attacks they're describing involved, there was one attack in Beersheba where a lone terrorist ran his car, used his car to run over people, jumped out of his car, stabbed people, he killed 4 people, and then he died himself. And Hamas described that as a heroic operation. This was not attacking police officers or military, it was attacking civilians. And The important thing to remember here is all of this talk about, well, it's the holy month of Ramadan, and it's Passover, and it, of course, is Good Friday today, and it is Holy Week. There are no reports of Christian violence. None. There are no reports of Jewish civilian violence. The only violence you can even talk about is police officers who are trying to keep people safe from these random terror attacks. And let me say that one of the things that I know this, I had the opportunity to speak last night with my brother Jonathan in Jerusalem, and of course people are concerned when you have 5-6 terror attacks, but back years before the wall was built, which has helped to keep Jewish people and Arab citizens of Israel safe. Before that was built, before there was a more cooperation, frankly, with the Palestinian Authority in suppressing terrorist attacks, Israel wasn't having 14 deaths. There were years where it was over 500 deaths in a year, through terror and blowing up pizza parlors and buses and attacking schools. And it is very important to put this kind of situation in context. NBC reports Palestinians clashed with Israeli police at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in Jerusalem on Friday, as thousands, more than 60,000, by the way, gathered for prayers during the holy month of Ramadan. The holy site, which is sacred to Jews and Muslims, has been the epicenter of Israeli-Palestinian unrest, and tensions were already heightened amid a recent wave of violence. Now, see, what they don't state there is there was no intention of Jewish people to storm any Palestinian sites or to storm Al-Aqsa Mosque. The reason the police went into Al-Aqsa is some of the stone throwers who had already injured police and were trying to injure Jewish worshippers below at the Western Wall. Those stone throwers had barricaded themselves inside the mosque. And one of the principles that Israel has been founded on is, no, you do not have freedom of religious expression if that expression involves harming and potentially killing other people. That's also a basic principle that I think we ought to and usually do honor in this greatest nation on God's green earth.
Have you heard about vine-to-bar chocolate? It's the winemaker's chocolate, the world's first chocolate made with well-vined Chardonnay marc from the beautiful coastal vineyards of North America. Gently pressed grapes are harvested after juicing, dried, and finely milled, and carefully blended into the finest dark chocolate. The Chardonnay marc contains highly beneficial grape nutrients, flavanols, and has a natural sweetness that flavors the luscious dark chocolate. Mouthwatering, flavorful, delectable dark chocolate goodness with Chardonnay sweetness and beneficial nutrients. And it's alcohol free too. It's Vine to Bar Chocolate. Order some today at vinetobar.com. That's VINETOBAR.com. Cold shipped to your door, it's Vine to Bar. Vine to Bar Chocolate. Visit us at vinetobar.com.
What is the difference between collagen protein and a whey protein? Pure collagen is an incomplete protein that supplies amino acids which support connective tissue repair. However, what determines most of the connective tissue synthesis in the body is the level of growth hormone. Children have wrinkle-free, plump skin and agile joints not because they're eating collagen every day, but because they have high levels of growth hormone. Low growth hormone levels results in wrinkles and diminished connective tissue health. Consuming collagen does not overcome this. Cold sterilized whey protein powder from grass-pastured cows is a complete protein and supports connective tissue health as well as glutathione production, immunity, detoxification, combats inflammation, supports muscle size and strength, energy, fat loss, and more. Connective tissue health is dependent upon proper nutrient levels, how clean the cellular environment is, and optimal levels of growth hormone. To learn more about a true fountain of youth protein powder called Green Metal Whey and how to support youthful levels of growth hormone, go to bestwheyprotein.net. That's bestwayprotein.net.